Have you known this woman? For a while, she was living paycheck to paycheck. Then the work that she'd been getting as a domestic dried up when the economy crashed. Her husband had already been deported back to their home country, back to the old neighborhood where the gangs had already found him, as they had threatened. She hoped they could stay in the States longer. When she looks at her son, she sees he is now on the threshold between boyhood and adolescence, as the roundness of his body gives way to more chiseled features, and his voice alternates between squawking and a smooth tenor, and also alternates between the mother tongue he shares with his mother and the newly acquired English he had mastered so much easily than she. He is ripe at the age when the gangs back home would try to recruit him. Her hope with her husband had been to build a better life for their boy. But now, as she looks at the cornmeal and oil left in their kitchen, only enough for a couple of tortillas, she could see they are one meal away from complete hunger, one illness away from frailty, one wrong move away from la migra's suspicion and deportation, one breath away from despair. Was it really worth it? Sometimes she wonders if they should just give in and see what would happen if she chose no longer to be in la lucha, in the struggle. She looks again at the boy and knows that before long, there won't even be a choice. When I read the story of Elijah's encounter with the widow, my mind pictures this woman. I don't know her well, but I have seen mothers like her coming through the food pantry at the church where I last served as pastor, with their children in tow to help carry grocery bags. I have met with parents in Honduras and Colombia, and also in the streets of Chicago, who shared this widow's fear for their children's safety in neighborhoods where political or gang-related violence is the norm. Last week, I met with staff from COFIA and First Friends and learned more of the struggles undocumented immigrants face here in northern New Jersey. And I am also the daughter of a single mom, a mom who pieced together a living for us as best she could, but at times was at a loss for how it would all come together. It is to this woman that Elijah the prophet, and later Jesus in the Gospels, brings hope. For widows in the Bible, the world is already a vulnerable, precarious place. Along with the grief that comes with the loss of a spouse, as women without husbands, widows lacked financial power, social standing, and property rights. The Mosaic Law makes no provision for widows. For this reason, when Naomi, in the book of Ruth, became a widow, she asks that people no longer call her Naomi, which means sweet or pleasant, but Mara, which in Hebrew means bitter. A widow with a son, however, could hope that her son would grow to provide for himself and his mother and give her the standing she had lost when her husband died. When Elijah encounters the widow at Zarephath, he has ventured far beyond any of his other activities we've read about in the northern kingdom of Israel. Zarephath was a marginal place located in the far northern region where Lebanon would be today. A woman at the margins of society in a village at the margins of Israel and about to enter the margins between life and death with her son as they nearly starve. This is the woman Elijah approaches and asks to be fed. He asks this woman who has so little left to give it to him. She puts up a weak fight. After all, she thinks they will starve anyway. So what is the difference between starving today or starving tomorrow? Elijah proclaims God's gift to this woman and her son. The jar of meal and the jar of oil would not be empty until the day that rains come down again on the earth. She could feed Elijah. She could feed herself. She could feed her son, and they would live. And yet, in a twisted irony, her son falls sick anyway and dies. I can identify with the way this widow held her son to her bosom as if her body can give her son life as it did when he was a baby. Recently, my daughter startled us from her bed as she sat up in her sleep, screaming, flailing, and kicking. Head back, she roared. She was having a night terror in her sleep. My wife and I tried holding her, stroking her hair, giving her all the body contact that would normally soothe her during a typical preschooler tantrum. We tried to rouse her with a cool washcloth on her face, with lights, and with gentle singing. But nothing we could offer would work. In fact, it seemed to only make it worse. The fit went on for at least 20 minutes, and just at the point when I was about to either call the pediatrician or figure out how to perform an exorcism, peaceful sleep overtook her body just as suddenly as a night terror had come on. I watched in wonder as her thrashing body just relented and fell back into its restorative slumber. Sleep, you win this time. Unlike many healing stories, neither the widow who meets Elijah or the widow in the gospel passage exhibits wondrous faith. Rather, they just seem to relent to what God, what Jesus will do. The widow who met Elijah was kind of antagonistic. She questions whether Elijah has made a mockery of her and her son to highlight her sinfulness through his death. The widow in Luke never even says a word in the passage, but Jesus had compassion on her and said to her, "Do not weep." It is not because of their virtue or their effort or their faithfulness that these widows' sons are restored to life. Maybe God just figured they needed a break. God has a special capacity to reach us when we are most broken. As broken people, we have more edges onto which God can encounter us. I do not say this to glorify brokenness, but to say that God finds the contours of our broken pieces and breathes life into them. We may be recipients of that grace. We may also be bringers of God's grace of new life to others on the boundary of hope and despair, faith and fear, connection and isolation, life, and death. We are just about to ordain Betsy Voriakis to the office of ruling elder. Now, Betsy, as an elder, we will not ask you to bring the dead back to life, at least not in your first year. But we do ask that you be open to receiving God's grace in ways that are beyond your control. Relent to what God can do. We also ask that you be willing to be God's instrument to offer that grace to others and to make this church a place where people can see their lives restored, can come and receive that grace in transformative ways. This is a task that all the church is called to, not just its ordained people. If God can work life-restoring wonders on a pagan widow in Zarephath who probably worships Baal, why not relent and give God a chance to do something wonderful for and through us? Amen.